Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, you know, the big rains this fall once again brought up the glaring infrastructure needs right here in town in Chicago. The rain forced the Chicago River to reverse itself, dumping sewage in the lake and into our drinking water. This issue is one that could be considered an anomaly, but if it wasn't happening at an alarming rate, climate change is real and it's posing severe threats not just to Chicago but the Midwest. Whether it's rainwater, sewage, flooding, or even superstorms, Chicago's going to need to think outside the box a bit about the future of our area. Tonight, my guest, Henry Henderson. Currently, he's the director of Midwest Programs for the National Resource Defense Council. And if his name sounds familiar, it's because Henderson was the very first environment commissioner here in the city of Chicago under Mayor Daley. He served in the Attorney General's office in the state of Illinois. He taught law and environmental policy at the University of Chicago. And in his new capacity, he oversees seven Midwest states for the NRDC. Who better to know what we have and what needs to be updated than Henry Henderson, my guest at the big table. Mr. Henderson, great to see you.
Oh, it's great to see you. Real pleasure.
I've had Josh on a couple of times, and we've talked a lot about environment on the show, and I love to have you in studio because I remember working with you when you were the first environment commissioner.
Right.
When we see stories like this, when we see the fall rains, and just recently, like in the last couple of months, when that torrential rain came through on that Saturday, and just it was an amazing amount of rainfall.
Huge.
It is having repercussions on not just, you know, what happens with our river and the fun science behind it, but the fact that it's pouring things that shouldn't be in our fresh water and putting it in our fresh water.
Yeah, well, it's a quality of life thing. It's a public safety thing. It's an economic thing. I mean, the realities are that it affects people where they live. It affects people's basements. It affects what they can do in the summer on the beaches.
Right.
And there are large implications with regard to how we earn a living and how we're going to be able to continue to invest and stay in this region.
Well, I always think about it because, you know, we always seem to marvel at the wonder that was us reversing the Chicago River at one point, the engineering feat.
Pretty audacious.
Right. They say we're just going to reverse the flow of water.
Yeah.
And as the climate change continues to change to how much rain comes down and how fast it comes down and all things, it's not necessarily the greatest thing that we reverse the river.
Well, no. And, people in Peoria, St. Louis, the fact that it sends it down to the Gulf of Mexico, and it's one of the largest sources of pollutants that are going into the Gulf of Mexico, creating the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico. You know, when you mess around with this kind of stuff, there are unintended consequences. But where we are now, you know, assessing where we are, it's a huge investment that was made here over a century ago in audacious infrastructure. And one of the things we ought to be seeing is, can we seize that kind of like visionary audacity to change the way we're investing today to meet the needs of today?
I mean, do you see an infrastructure project like that where we came together in a city that works and decided to reverse the river? Do you see that kind of will, political will or any other municipal will to make a big project like that happen in 2017, 2018, 2020?
Well, there are parts of the world that are making big investments like this. Like China, for instance, is building an amazing amount of infrastructure and putting huge amount of changes in transportation, water, etc., in order to deal with current problems and projected future problems. We have a lot of problems in the United States coming together around these sorts of issues. There are things that can be done and can be done immediately, like the green infrastructure approach, where you capture the rainwater and treat it as a resource as opposed to a waste disposal problem. Our current system treats it as a waste disposal problem.
Right.
So it shoves it into combined sewers. The combined sewers overflow, floods basements, then dumps highly contaminated water into the river. And as we can see with the reversal of the river going into the lake, which is our source of drinking water, which is why we reversed the Chicago River to begin with, to stop putting that stuff into where we'd get our drinking water.
You know, with you at the NRDC, but others, I mean, when I think about the EPA or I think about the municipalities, the mayors, the governors, the people in the regions that you serve, the seven states, are they aware? Is this something that's becoming higher on the priority list, that this old infrastructure projects, particularly with the Chicago River, is wreaking havoc everywhere?
Well, there's an awareness within the Great Lakes Basin that the Chicago River situation is problematic. It's driven largely by the problem of invasive species and the so-called, you know, crisis around the Asian carp and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
The other Great Lakes states have a severe concern about that and what it would do to the ecosystem and the economy we have in the Great Lakes if this amazing invasive species gets into the lake, and it is a serious infrastructure issue. There are a lot of the states are looking at these issues in terms of how we deal with water infrastructure. It is very much at the lower level of infrastructure thinking, though. It's like, how do you do these rain gardens? How do you do things like green roofs, et cetera, that slow the movement of water into our sewer system and keeps it from overflowing? That's a really important thing, right. And it can get things done. But it's not transformative in terms of our wastewater system is based upon simply collecting as much of this as possible, mixing it with sewage, and then sending it elsewhere.
Yeah, that seems
like,
to be
down to the Gulf of Mexico,
that's
to St. Louis, et cetera.
Right.
As opposed to how do we really rethink this, and how do we approach something like our current combined sewer system? Can we redo that? Can we re-engineer that? There are communities in our region which have been doing that, but in Chicago itself, it's a gigantic issue. And that needs the engineering thinking and economic review of that needs to happen.
And obviously, that's the big part of it, the economic review. And we talk about where we're at as a city and even a region. We talk about how taxed out, no pun intended, you know, the, everything is. Henry Henderson is my guest. He's the director of the Midwest Programs for National Resource Defense Council, was also the first environment commissioner for the city of Chicago under Mayor Daley. Let's take a break and let's talk about that. Because you have a chance. You've been in both places. You understand what it takes to actually think outside the box when it comes to environmental issues and also how to figure out how to pay for them. That's really going to be the issue. Henry Henderson, my guest at the big table. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. My guest at the big table, Henry Henderson, the first ever environment commissioner for the city of Chicago. That was under Mayor Daley in the 90s. He's now the director of Midwest Programs for the NRDC. He serves seven Midwest states, and we're talking about the issues of environment and also infrastructure, but also how we're going to pay for all this stuff.
Yeah.
Because it does seem at the end of the day that we all come together, community, municipalities, even citizens, to say, yeah, we can't be dumping sewage into the lake water.
No.
But the concept of how to fix that, when you put that price tag on it and you go to any citizen in the city of Chicago and say, you know what, this, we're going to have to raise your taxes to do this, they're going to say, I'm okay with a little sewage in my... How do you find a way to convince people that these projects that cost a lot of money need to be done?
Yeah. Well, I think there are ways to begin in a sensible way where you're making an investment that actually protects people's property. For instance, when you get these huge storms that utterly predicted by climate scientists that this would happen, unprecedented amounts of rain falling in a very short time period, and our system is not built around that. So you get flooding of the system. It backs up into people's basements. We've got a lot of people whose basements repeatedly flood.
Yeah.
And this is a health issue, but it's also an economic issue.
We saw this along the Fox River. We saw it in Elgin, other places this summer.
You see it on the northwest side of Chicago. You see it on the south side. It's something that creates a real economic burden. Can we be doing things now that shave off the possibility of people getting their basements flooded and sewage going to their lakes and them not being able to go to the beach and, you know, the longer-term problem of cumulative input of contaminants that could affect our drinking water? These are big issues. But we also need to be looking at the fact that there actually are a fair amount of dollars going into infrastructure, and are they being used intelligently? There's a whole important set of programs on the federal side which are revolving loan funds that are funded by the federal government.
Right.
A lot of the thinking around that is simply how do we do the same thing we've done before? The fact is there's a fair amount of money that comes through that, and we've been doing analysis of these revolving loan funds, which deal with both drinking water and with sewage, and can they be used to actually have a backstop in a way to leverage further loans and to actually be doing, you know, intelligent long-term funding.
So a lot of it is a thought. And I want to get into that because when you came in and Mayor Daley determined that we needed an environment commissioner, we needed an environment department, were these the same issues that were being talked about in the mid-90s or, you know, where you start to go, oh, we need to change the reversal of the river. We got to think about sewage. We got to think about flooding in the rivers. I mean, were these the same things in that office that we're discussing in 2017?
When we began the Department of Environment, the big problem was significant criminal assault on our communities through illegal dumping. You remember the Silver Shovel,
yeah, right.
Shocking thing with hundreds of thousands of tons of debris being dumped in the middle of communities with impunity. And we needed to deal with those issues. So set of enforcement and transformation of how we go about dealing with these issues and getting community input into what happens in their own communities was a big deal. But as we got a handle on that, and a number of people went to jail, and you know it focused the imagination admirably for a whole lot of people. That was very important. But you know the mayor started thinking a great deal about what's with the river. His father was big on the river. You know, he had this whole vision of how do you go down and fish in the river? How do you do a whole range of things? That this is a backyard that is, again, part of the thinking of the current administration. So there was a lot of thinking about that, and Mayor Daley actually came to this conclusion that because of a lot of problems with the river, we ought to rethink the reversal. So there has been a lot of thinking about this. The economics, as you say, are a big problem. In addition to which, a commitment to the status quo is another big problem. You know, and if you look at the Chicago River, it is an adjunct to the sewer system. It is used to dump sewage, but move it away from the lake. As we can see now with these huge storms, that is no longer infrastructure that's performing. So we have an inducement to seriously rethink this from a health point of view and from an economic point of view.
It kind of blows my mind to think that, you know, whenever that was, when the mayor's talking about, I really want to rethink the reversal of the river, to where we're at now is a couple decades. I think about that. There are a lot of environmental concerns that are on the minds of the leaders of this area, but because of resources, because of economic viability, because you have to buck the trends and the lot and everyone that wants it to stay the status quo, it's very difficult politically to make any changes when it comes to the environment.
It is, but I think we've got two things here. We're talking about adaptation to deal with changed circumstances. So, you know, how do we adapt to the realities that are confronting us today? We have a lot of information, a lot of experience,
right,
that the status quo is not performing. How do we start changing that thinking? We've got the other piece, which is mitigation, which is how do we stop the drivers that are turbocharging these changes, that are making the climate is changing, the weather is changing, the infrastructure we're living with today is not fit for the current situation. How do we dial that back? There's actually been a fair amount, and I think really good news in the Midwest. In Chicago, you've got the Mayor Rahm Emanuel is convening this large symposium and a summit of cities from around the world to talk about these issues, both adaptation and mitigation. Cities leading because they're actually the frontline communities which are feeling it the most. So there's a lot to be said about the creativity and the commitment of a lot of our municipal leaders, you know, and Mayor Emanuel has committed to the Paris Climate Accords. Mm-hmm. The only nation on earth that is withdrawing from that is the United States. At a time when we're experiencing unambiguously these issues with storms, with fires, with hurricanes that are devastating.
But you and I both know, because, you know, we've talked about environment. You've obviously lived it. I've talked about it for years. The Paris Accord, there's political ideology at play.
Well, yeah.
And the idea that how much the United States really needs to fit the bill for other countries to be able to take on issues around coal or issues around pollution. And that essentially is when you think of the Republican administration now, they don't want to fit the bill. Far too often we get into the conversations where you hear they actually want to keep the environment the way it is, but it's not necessarily that case. It again comes down to money in the way that, I don't know, there's something about the way that municipalities and our government, our federal government, wants to spend money that is not really in line with how fast we have to spend it, if that makes sense.
Well, I think there's a great deal of truth to that. You know, it's that we just had the EPA under this administration releasing a report saying climate change is rapidly moving forward well beyond our worst-case scenario.
Right.
And it has all these manifestations from the experience with these amazing hurricanes, which have, you know, rendered basically Puerto Rico absolutely no clean water to drink, no energy. You've got serious problems in Houston. I mean, you know, the American people are suffering in these in large parts of the country because of the turbocharging of climate change to these natural disasters. So where does the leadership come from? And there's a lot to be said about, you know, getting outside of the ideological pieces.
Right, right.
The Midwest, for instance, there was hugely important legislation passed the last year on climate change and clean energy in Michigan, unambiguously dominated by Republicans on the state level, and yet the state level embraced it.
Right, they recognize what's happening.
And they see it as, you know, it's also an embrace of an economic future. There are now 2.2 million people working in energy efficiency in the United States today. That is a lot of people. It supports a huge amount of businesses. There is an economic case to be made about responding to these challenges. You've got the city of Chicago. It's part of the City Energy Project, which includes 40 cities in the United States, where you're retrofitting all these buildings downtown Chicago. What does that do? You don't pick up a building and send it to China to get retrofit. You've got identifiable trades. You've got identifiable manufacturers. You've got identifiable workers who have significant, important, long-term jobs doing this kind of thing. And that benefits the economics of running the building, and it creates a local economy that's much more viable.
Henry Henderson, my guest tonight at the big table. He's the director of the Midwest Program for the National Resource Defense Council. He represents seven different Midwest states for the NRDC, also the former first ever environment commissioner for the city of Chicago under Mayor Daley. All right, we'll take a quick break. Come back, and we will continue our conversation with Henry here on The Download. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me, Henry Henderson, longtime environmentalist, but first ever environment commissioner for the city of Chicago under Richard M. Daley. Also, he is the director of the Midwest Program for the National Resource Defense Council. He represents seven different Midwest states. You know, we're talking about environment because a symposium's coming up here in Chicago, and it seems that Chicago, like other big cities in this country, are taking a lead. They're almost separating themselves from the federal government and ideology to say, listen, we're going to continue where we're going. The question on the table, and the reason that I have you here, because and of course, you know, you're a charming guy. But I'm intrigued on how, from your vantage point, from being the first ever environment commissioner, how you convince a citizen and also a government, as well as an industry, that change has to happen, that there needs to be money, priority, commitment, and responsibility, I think, from communities, that climate change is real, it's there.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
Well, there are a range of things that you can take a part on that. For instance, I mentioned in Michigan, very important clean energy legislation passed last year. In Illinois, there's the Future Energy Jobs Act, which was passed by the General Assembly and signed by the governor, which brought together this huge coalition of businesses, of activists, of unions, and citizens to pass this, because there's an agreement, not necessarily full-on agreement about the nature of climate change, but that the solution set, i.e. investment in clean energy, was the way forward in the future. And among the things that need to happen, it's not just like built infrastructure like combined sewers that don't get the job done. There's legal infrastructure where the definition of how you make a living, for instance, the utilities, Commonwealth Edison, the original infrastructure for their making money was selling more and more and more and more energy, which meant building more and more coal plants at the time.
Right.
Changing the way you can earn money as a utility by full energy services, which includes investing in retrofitting buildings. So you aren't selling as much energy, but you get a return on your investment of driving down the use of energy, so that the huge waste of energy in the United States today is going down, 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 because of changing the business model of utilities. You can make money by doing clean energy choices.
Does that need to be a marketing campaign to people?
It's multiple things, I think, Justin. It's you've got the broad-based campaigns about, you know, what our problems are, what our solutions are. How do you dial it down into the actual experience of real people? the issue of climate change is remarkably abstract. But if you're talking about the flooding of your basement, the loss of the value of your home, not being, you know, metaphorically but actually literally underwater, and what that means in terms of the disruption of your life and your major asset
right.
in life.
People get that.
It matters. I mean, it really matters. And, you know, there was an interesting thing about a family on the South Side. It's like the third generation living in this house, which they've been very happy with. But in the last 5 years, the basement has flooded repeatedly, and the cost and disruption is remarkable. And that's literally making climate change come home. So there's a lot of discussion, a lot of broad-based campaign, but also retailing information that is really critically important.
I always think about the role of government when it comes to environment and climate change. And even in your time when you were at the Environment Department, you had one side which was policing in a way to say that the corporate polluters and what we saw with Silver Shovel, but it's still an issue when you see the plants that are along in the southeast side there. And then on the other side, you had making sure that the infrastructure is up to date, sewage, pipes, other things that are – we're not wasting water, all that kind of stuff, right? But is there a third element? You see this a little bit more in states that are more at risk. California, for example. You can only use water on certain days to water your plants.
Right.
And I think about other municipalities where they start to get into regulating your use of natural resources.
Yeah.
Do you see that as – that is what governments have to do in 2017? Do we have to come in and say, the law is you have to recycle? The law is if you can take a 15-minute shower, whatever it is. You know, I don't know what the law might be, but do you see a future in which that is how we live?
I certainly hope that the transformation of habits that are no longer sustainable don't become a question of policing across the board. I mean, something like, taking a hot shower for a particular period of time is an utterly different set of realities than putting 700,000 tons of waste in the middle of a community.
Sure.
That, with a $23 million cleanup. I mean, you don't want to get into this nanny state thing. There's actually a way in which people transform the way they live, the way they operate, et cetera. There's an interesting, Jane Addams, she did this very interesting book about living at Hull House. And there are about three chapters in there about waste management and how it was being managed at the time when she was, beginning Hull House. And then what is the system that allows the buildup of 10 feet of garbage in our alleyways where children play and the community she was working in? And how do you approach the city council? How do you identify heroes and champions? How do you work away patiently but determinedly over a period of time and transform the way things were? And she got herself elected to a solid waste board, that helped change that. It's steady damn work is what it is. You've got to identify a series of really clear goals. You've got to identify the constituencies that matter. And you've got to figure out different ways to approach them because the status quo is one of the easiest things to be comfortable with.
Right.
And that's part of what we're looking at with regard to wastewater in the city of Chicago. It's like the status quo, which is you look at the river as essentially an adjunct to the sewer system, which the previous Water Reclamation District chief engineer used to say, this is not the waters of the United States. This is part of a sewer, okay? So how can you be – that's no longer the position of MWRD down the street from here, and they're interested in transforming the way they do things around this. But at a time, it was like, this is status quo. This is what I've inherited, and that's how I should treat it. Why are you criticizing?
That's how it's always been done, right.
Why are you criticizing me? This was one of the great engineering feats of the world. We turned this into a part of a sewer system that sends our problem elsewhere. So, it's steady work of why this is not sustainable. And there's a huge health issue here. There's a huge economic reality. The economic reality is somewhat invisible to a range of people. And it's part of our job to make that more visible.
But having you here to talk about your decades of work in trying to, whether it be at the municipality level, whether working in governments or working at NRDC, but this idea that, okay, you know what, you 20-plus years since you were environment commissioner, it has been steady. But now we're in 2017 where hurricanes are wiping out things every other, and rains are coming in like they were predicted to flood rivers. Is that going to be every summer? Is that going to be every fall the same way? Does steady have to turn to immediate? And and how do you do that politically?
Well, it's a huge thing. We say all the time when we identify the fact that we are winning lots of battles, but we are not winning the war. And you know, the question is, can you win a war? Well, you can definitely change the terms, and you can establish a new set of practices and habits that are part of a public ethic. That's what we need to be doing.
Because I think about that. I think about we started this conversation talking about the audacious infrastructure plans for reversing the Chicago River. How big thinking do you have to be in 2017? I would assume we would be in a position where the mayor could come forward or the governor or the president or anyone who's in a position of authority and deliver on an audacious plan to address climate change. It feels like the environment to do that is right.
Well, what I'm hoping is that after this summit that Mayor Emanuel is putting on, which has a lot of civic support, and you're bringing a lot of important mayors here, that you know, they will sign on to some very audacious plans. You know, and how do you put a price on carbon? How do you actually commit to, you know, most of these leaders have within their own jurisdiction transformation of their built infrastructure. So it's becoming much more efficient. They're committing to renewables. They're committing to a number of them to drinking water and wastewater infrastructure that is much more responsive to the threats we're facing today. So as you get leaders like this together, it can have a significant transformation because they don't have, as mayors, it's one of the pleasures of working on the city level, is you do not have the luxury of thinking simply ideologically. It's what's on this corner that's happening. What is happening within this neighborhood? How do the asthma rates relate to how our energy is produced? And how do property values relate to reliable of our energy grid and the reliability of our water so that we're not drinking lead-infested water that creates all kinds of long-term irreversible impacts. So that's a lot of the thinking that's happening at the municipal level, and I think it's because of the closeness to real people and real issues.
We've heard a lot about green infrastructure. We've heard it, you know, about the city hall having the garden on top.
Yeah.
The mayor is being progressive in the sense that they're looking for green technology, clean energy in the area. From your vantage point, as the first ever environment commissioner here in the city of Chicago, are we making strides? Is it in 20 years' time? Are you optimistic about where we are, not just as a government, but as a people in the Midwest?
I am surprisingly optimistic about the Midwest, which is, you know, one of the most energy demanding parts of our economy. And it is a place where there are huge long-term and structural problems with the economy. And yet you've got the emergence of leaders on both sides of the aisle. You know, you've got progressive leadership of John Kasich, very conservative governor of Ohio, who is really committed to energy efficiency and clean water and sees this as a deeply ethical commitment. You've got interesting realities with these other states like Iowa, which is unambiguously a Republican state that is committed to renewable energy and understands this as part of the future economic reality, and it fades into, you know, a solution set. So I'm optimistic about it. I'm a Midwesterner. I love being in the center of the country. And I'm particularly, if you look at climate change and you refer to problems of California and lack of water, here we've got 95% of the available fresh water in the United States of America. If that doesn't focus the imagination to do the right thing by it,
well, it also makes us lazy. That you're like, you know, a little sewage got in there, so what? There's so much of it. And that's what I think. I'm not sure.
Well,
I
that's
feel like
so ludicrous. It's hard to believe. I mean, honest to God. I mean, you know, who wants to go swimming in or drink out of your toilet?
Yeah.
You know, and here we are at the bottom of Lake Michigan, where it's not like this stuff is circulated and gets out of our environment. It's like accumulating at the bottom of the lake here. So, are we going to do the right thing? Are we going to like? Who cares about whether BP refinery in Whiting is increasing the pollutant load? you know, there's just so much water out there. What kind of impact can they have? I mean, it's like it's not recognizing the human impact that is utterly transforming the environment that we depend upon. You know, we've moved to the what's now being called the Anthropocene part of the history of Earth, which is the human impact is pervasive, and if we don't get a handle on it, lazy is one of the least insults you can apply to that. I like that.
Henry Henderson, the director of the Midwest Programs for the National Resource Defense Council. He oversees seven Midwest states. He's also the former, first ever, Environment Commissioner for the City of Chicago back in the 90s under Mayor Daley. Henry, great to have you here.
This was a great gig.
I know. Many more questions about that, but yeah. We'll do that another time. Thanks for being my guest, and I appreciate it.
I really appreciate you having me on, and this is such a wonderfully important set of questions, and I appreciate you, like, getting into it. So thank you.